Welcome back to Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650 with Jamie Dodd and Thomas Drantz here live from the Kintec Studio. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. The Bridge Street Dunbar Lumber in Ladner has moved to Progress Way in Tilbury's Industrial Park. More room, more product, more awesome. Details at DunbarLumber.com. Landon Ferraro going to join us here in just a minute to weigh in on the Canucks wrapping up their early season road trip tonight in Chicago against the Blackhawks, and we'll connect with Landon in just a second here. Send your text in, 650-650, to the Dunbar Lumber text line, and a lot of thoughts coming in, Drantz, about the power play, the personnel on the power play. We'll see what it looks like tonight, right? I mean, we talked about it yesterday. Baines featured there at practice. Garland was on the first unit. How much of that was Miller not being available to practice yesterday? How much of that is guys who are actually going to move up? I mean, we have people texting in, hey, has Nils Höglander earned a look potentially on the power play? And, you know, I think what we will start to see in all likelihood, if as long as it's not clicking, is the pool of players that Tocchet is willing to draw from to try there is going to get bigger and bigger until he finds some solutions. All right, we'll reconnect with Drantz here momentarily. First, we'll get Landon Ferraro on the line. Then we'll get Thomas Drantz on the line. And then I won't just be talking to myself. But right now, I am, in fact, just talking to myself. So 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. And it was Johnny from Langley who texted in. Boys, thoughts on Höglander in the bumper on power play one. That preseason game, he looked very sharp there. I can't figure out why that has not been given more of a look. He appears to have the shot and quick release for that space. I feel like he can also help in other ways, too. That's from Johnny from Langley. And Drantzer, we have you back now. And, you know, beyond even just, okay, Höglander in the bumper and the specifics of that, as I was saying, it does feel like, you know, we saw Baines possibly in a placeholder role there yesterday at practice, Garland there, and, you know, as long as it goes without finding solutions, the pool of potential guys who could fit in on power play one, I think, is going to keep getting bigger, and that absolutely could include Nils Höglander at some point.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's an interesting thing to try, given that Höglander's pretty good at working through space. He's pretty good on retrievals. You know, you want a lefty in the bumper who can finish and who can help you retrieve and maintain possession, maybe support a little bit as a neutral zone puck carrier. I mean, Höglander's got all of it. You know, back in the day, like Calle Järnkrok in his Nashville Predators days, he certainly wasn't the fourth most skilled forward that the Predators had, but for whatever reason, the power play always worked when he was there, right? He was like one of those more than the sum of their parts type power play contributors. You know, if you're talking about guys with an opportunity to do that, we talked about Dakota Joshua as a dark horse guy for that role. I mean, I do think Höglander could fit the bill. But ultimately, Jamie, especially now that we're on day two of trying to shoehorn some random Canucks guy onto the power play, like, Daniel Sprong's right there, man.
Yeah.
You know?
Absolutely. All right. Now joining us here on Canucks Talk, a regular contributor here on Sportsnet 650, former NHL player. And I got to say, Drantz did a fantastic job filling in as guest co-host in studio on Friday when you were off the show. Very pleased to have him back on. He is Landon Ferraro. Landon, thanks for doing this, man. What's going on?
Oh, not much, guys. Just hanging out, trying to catch up before all the games start today.
Yeah, it is a busy, busy one tonight. And the 5:15, the non-traditional 5:15 start time for the Canucks. And, you know, one of the other interesting things about this game is they take on the Blackhawks. And I know Rick Tocchet referenced it earlier today. It's that classic last game of a road trip spot, which can be a tricky one for teams, right? As you start to turn your attention to, hey, we're going to be back home soon. You know, we're getting on that plane in a few hours. What are the keys for a team to ignore that kind of temptation and go in and play just a really professional game in situations like this?
I think the biggest thing is just having a mature group that can do that anyway. And I feel like this group has, you know, a really good core that has been through, you know, quite a bit and quite a bit together that can, you know, just make sure that everyone's focused. But, you know, as much as it's not a good thing, it's one way to look at it here in the sense of, they didn't have the best start, and they're now just starting to roll a little bit. Like, I don't feel like they'll be looking at or looking past this game in Chicago. Like, they're going to be looking forward to really keeping that ball rolling here.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I mean, you don't want to just finish the road trip strong, right? But you want to, hey, turn this all of a sudden into a winning streak here if you can pick up your third game in a row against the Blackhawks. And one player I wanted to ask you about specifically, Landon, who scored his first goal against Philadelphia in the last couple of games. He's thrown a ton of hits, taken a ton of shots as well, and that's Kiefer Sherwood. And seems like that third line with him and Teddy Bluger and Danton Heinen maybe found a little bit of a spark, a little bit of chemistry. But what have you seen from Kiefer Sherwood as he, you know, tries to find kind of his role and make his mark on a new team with the Canucks?
Well, you know, with watching all these games, he's definitely one of those guys I watch, and it makes me so happy that I'm not in pads playing anymore because he's just an absolute wrecking ball out there. But you can see where, with some more comfortability, you know, playing with some players here in Vancouver, that the offense can come, not where he's going to be this dynamic player, but with an opportunity, like a quick strike off the faceoff the other night, like, he has the hands to do that. And he's getting more comfortable, but, you know, with his line, it's kind of been, you know, Bluger has had a great start to the season, and he's kind of anchoring that line right now, and they keep moving guys around, and that's really a line that's been good for them. And Sherwood and Bluger together especially, you know, they're heavy on pucks, they get in on the forecheck, they're good defensively, so, you know, they have the makeup to be, you know, a really good, you know, bottom six line that can provide some bit of a pop for you too, whether it's on the score sheet or literally popping into defensemen in the other zone.
Landon, what have you made of this line with Pettersson, Hoglander, and Garland in their two games so far?
I feel like it's gotten more out of Pettersson that, you know, the coaching staff and the team's looking for. You know, I thought he had some better shifts last game, especially where, you know, he's getting through people's hands on forecheck and making plays. You know, his pass to Hoglander's goal was beautiful. Like, that, you know, that takes presence of mind to know that he's coming from around the net. Like, majority of guys are just shooting that. So, you know, they're starting to pick it up, and just like Rick Tocchet has talked about numerous times now in Garland, of, you know, he's a player that can really drag players along with him in a good way. He's just such an energizer bunny out there that, you know, if you're not skating next to him on that line, you're going to stand out even more. And not saying you need to force Pettersson into it by, you know, in that sense, but it's a good, you know, it's a good person to have rub off on him as he's building his confidence back up.
With Hoglander's sort of spiking ice time and usage here, are you seeing anything different from him in terms of the defensive side of the game, or do you think this is a matter of simply adjusting to, like, life as a more regularly, frequently used player in the NHL? Like, is this just reps, or are we seeing something more material in terms of Hoglander's details?
I think it's a bit of both. Like, he's getting more experience and learning what works and what doesn't work for himself in the league. And then on top of that, you know, he's getting put in more situations as he goes along here that he has to keep showing that he can do it. You know, he's also a player that, with that much energy, like, he's going to be moving around a lot. But when it gets back to the D zone, like, you need to be able to calm your mind down and play the team game, and then you can be the spark plug at the other end again. But, you know, I think he's had a pretty good start. I think he can keep building here and keep finding his game. But, I mean, the biggest thing with him, you can't teach his energy level and his care level, which is high, which is a real good place to be starting from.
Yeah, and with Hoglander's minutes, right? I mean, last year he had the great season. He scored 24 goals, but his role could kind of change night to night, right? Sometimes he'd be up playing next to Elias Pettersson, you know, but maybe he'd still only play 10, 11 minutes. Some nights he'd be farther down the lineup. He got scratched in the playoffs. And You know, for a player, not that Nils Höglander is now locked in as a top six guy, but that's how they're using him early in the season. What does it do for your mentality when you feel like you've really got a consistent role on a team, and especially when you feel like maybe you've earned the coach's trust to a degree you didn't have it before? What kind of impact does that have on your game and how you're approaching the games as a player?
Well, it definitely frees you up, right? Like, if you don't feel like you're looking over your shoulder every time that you're about to make a move, wondering if it doesn't work, if you're going to play again, you know, like, you need to be able to make plays and be free to do that. But a big part of maturing into a real top six forward is understanding when it's okay to make that move and when it's not. And it's not whether it's going to be a benching or not, it's just, you know, I know I can beat this guy, or I have the support near me that I can take a chance here to make a play. And if it's not there, well, that's when I just get it by and continue on for the next try, right? Like, it's just him, you know, just expanding as a player. But for me, like, I feel like he's someone that, you know, he has this, we can say knock on him, but, you know, just the part of his game where it's been such a focus that he needs to just mature and get better at. But I feel like he's going to be someone, like, you know, a year or two from now that has just kept building and building, and you don't talk about it anymore. But for the longest time at the start, it was just such a talking point that when a little mistake creeps up, it's instantly there again, right?
Yeah, it's one of those things where once you've kind of got that trust, not that, you know, you can lose it, but it's not every mistake you're not worried about being stapled to the bench, right? Because the coach knows, hey, that's an anomaly. It's not what we're going to expect from you on kind of a shift-by-shift basis. And it's always interesting to see that process with younger players. I mean, I think about Brock Besser, and, you know, he didn't quite have quite that same conversation around him when he came into the league. But now, I think without a lot of people even noticing, you know, he's one of the most defensively reliable, most trusted forwards in the league. And, you know, some young players are just capable of doing that. Whereas you said, you know, you go from, oh man, major question marks as a rookie or a second year player trying to make it. And then all of a sudden, a few years later, it's you're a guy who's being tapped to go out there and close out games.
Yeah. And, you know, like, just think of how long it takes some guys to get out of, you know, the things that are being said about them that become kind of, you know, just stapled to them. You know, like, look at JT Miller. For the longest time, he had kind of an attitude problem. He was emotional and all of this. But now, whenever you hear, especially Canuck fans and media talking about him, he's the emotional leader on this team, and he's the one that really pulls everyone in, right? So, like, between maturing and figuring out, you know, for him, where that line was, and for Höglander, where his line is for making plays, like, you just need to mature a bit. And then before you know it, you know, it's not something, it's not a negative when it's talked about you anymore. It's either just not discussed or it's a positive.
Landon, just to really hone in on what we're seeing or not from Pettersson, does this look like, I've got this theory that I've been working on, that while we're in these splits, right? The 31 points in his last 51 games, and, you know, no 5-on-5 goals since March 5th. That's a 30-game stretch, whatever it is. To me, anyway, this looks materially different than it did during the stretch run and in the playoffs last year. I do think there's more just in terms of playing on the inside and being, like, productive, whether or not the points are coming. I think this looks different. But what are you seeing specifically from Pettersson here?
Yeah, again, like, you know, we all know he has unbelievable vision and he's incredibly skilled. The thing that I've always liked watching with him is, like, he's not a perimeter playmaker that he has to see in, you know, these unbelievable saucer passes through the seam every time. Like, for him, it was getting in on a forecheck and using that reverse hit that he loves and uses so well, and, you know, being, not that he's, you know, like a bone crushing guy, but he's always involved physically to a point where, you know, like, he makes very good plays out of tight areas, and that's being in the battle. And I feel like, especially last game, you know, he was getting through hands a lot more, opening up some space for his line mates. You know, they had a really good back check. I forget who it was on, but coming back through the middle, and, like, he cut back hard against him, delivered a pretty good hit and made the pass get messed up so that they could turn it back on transition. Like, he's starting to be around the puck more, and not just around it, but involved with it, and I think that's a huge key for him.
With where the Canucks are at this stage in the early going, is there anything that stands out to you from a player performance standpoint that you'd sort of list as the biggest surprise given what you expected coming into the year?
I would have to say Garland, even though he has been, he had a great year last year. Like, the level he's at right now, I feel is, he's stepped up again. He almost seems more determined than last year on every puck battle. Like, out of everyone watching, like, I am glued to him when he's on the ice now. Like, it's, whether you think he's going to be, in on the offensive side, but, like, he is involved everywhere on the ice. So, I mean, he's doing exactly what Tocchet had said, and he's dragging guys along, and there's still some guys that need some help that he can kind of lend a hand to here.
You know, we talked on Friday, Landon, about the power play, and the word you used was slow, right? It just keeps looking slow out there, in terms of zone entries, when they're set up, all of that. Now, we'll see how the power play unit actually looks tonight, but Connor Garland was with the first unit at practice yesterday, and given what you were just saying about his energy, his determination, all of that, is he a guy who can help change the power play, quicken it up, stop it from being so slow for this team?
I think so, and I think other than the obvious in the sense of, Garland's fast, he plays quick, he's all over a forecheck, like he's going to hound the puck in zone. So he should be able to help, whether he's first on it or the support guy. Like, he's going to be there for them. But the other part of Garland that is, might be why I like him as much as I do as well is, like, he's not afraid to speak his mind on the bench or on the ice. Like, he's going to be in those other four guys' ears, making sure they're ready and moving. So, he's going to be excited. Garland's going to be excited getting that opportunity if it does come. And I think he's going to be the one to, especially if he's in the middle of the ice in the bumper spot, it's all going to run through him for a bit. Let him get some touches and see what can happen.
Another guy I wanted to ask you about, Landon, is Jake DeBrusque, most high-profile signing for the Canucks as a free agent this summer. And he, has four assists through five games, so certainly the production is there. But he's also bounced around the lineup a little bit, right? Starting next to Elias Pettersson, dropping down to the third line now with JT Miller and Brock Besser on the first line. Looks like he might get bumped off the first unit power play as well. Is this just it doesn't feel like it's on DeBrusque that he's getting bumped around, right? It's just other things happening. But what have you seen from Jake DeBrusque so far as a Canuck?
Yeah, he's played well. He hasn't quite, of course, gotten to the level that he was at in Boston. But, I don't think that's on him, like you said. Like, he's bounced around a lot and yet has still found a way to contribute. So, if anything, I think that speaks to the type of player and personality that DeBrusque has, that he can get bounced around and kind of have, go from, you're absolutely cemented to Pettersson as a pair to, in the preseason after he signed, to getting bounced around. Like, that's a bit hard. Like, you've changed organizations for the first time in your career, there's a lot of things moving, and then all of a sudden, now you're moving a ton in the lineup as well. Like, it's not an easy situation, but, he's found a way to contribute a bit, and, again, I think that's something where if Pettersson can get moving with Garland and Hoglander and, kind of get back into his rhythm, that's the key, obviously, to getting kind of back to those pairs and making this, as deep of a lineup as possible.
Landon, great stuff as always. Really appreciate it. Looking forward to the next time we get to chat. Enjoy the games tonight.
Hey, you as well.
That is Landon Ferraro, Sportsnet Canucks analyst, regular contributor here on the radio. You also see him on the panel on TV and, of course, former NHL player as well, weighing in on the Canucks with us here on Canucks Talk, and vouching for Connor Garland getting an opportunity on Power Play 1, Dranser, given the energy and the impact that Garland's had in the early going here.
Yeah, I'm curious to see it. I mean, I think Rick Tocchet started saying it explicitly, and I don't think it's a hot take, that Garland's been the club's most consistent forward. He has been, right? This is clearly a player who I think has, you know, not just cemented himself in the internal pecking order, but I think is beginning to be recognized for what he can do, right? This is not a good depth guy. This is not a good middle six winger. This is a difference maker who has a top line level impact, even if he's playing reduced minutes, and sort of has somewhat consistently across the last 3 years. Now it just feels like the opportunities are beginning to more closely match, you know, his true talent level. And that's good to see because, man, he's impressive. There's just not a lot of guys in the league who can be like dominant down low forces at 5'8" or whatever Garland is, right?
No.
I mean, that is an incredible skill set. It's fun to watch. It's pretty remarkable, the run that he's been on to start this season and really dating back to last year, too, where I'd argue he was driving along that really emerged in the second half as arguably the key non-Hughes engine for this team at 5-on-5.
Yeah, and he's been a key play driver for them already this season as well. And, you know, you and I have talked a lot about, hey, when do they give Connor Garland that top six opportunity? He's getting it now, and it just feels like the kind of thing where, okay, they were reluctant to go to it, but I think he's going to be hard to dislodge, right? Once he starts getting those increased minutes. And as you said, you know, he's obviously got Rick Tocchet obviously holds him in high regard. He's getting the opportunity potentially on the power play tonight. But like once he's there, I think it's going to be very, very hard to go away from that for somebody else to break through and take that top six spot back from Connor Garland, given how consistently productive he's been for this team over the last couple of seasons.
Yeah, especially if this continues to work with Pedersen, right? I mean, one thing I'd say is, and I guess we did see it, right? Like Garland sends the pass from down low behind the net, basically up to
yep.
Pedersen in the high slot on the Hoglander goal, and it's a fabulous bit of chemistry between Pedersen and Hoglander. Pedersen, by the way, didn't look or think shot for a moment. He kind of expected that Hoglander would pop out into the crease, and obviously Hoglander had time to like set up a lawn chair and open up a book if he'd wanted to. That's how much space Pedersen found him with in the Philadelphia end of the ice. But, you know, that was sort of the first example, I guess, we've seen in some ways of Garland's playmaking ability complementing Pedersen. I think there's going to be more there. You know, when you think about Pedersen as a one-shot scoring left-handed sniper, and you think about Garland as a righty who's been Vancouver's most productive primary assist rate guy over the last 3 years, right? The most efficient when sort of rated for time on ice. You know, the synergy there should be evident, should come to the fore, like should play here. And so I'll be curious to see if they can sort of continue to build chemistry, given that really, you know, that this is something we haven't seen for very long, very often. Pedersen playing with Garland. This is very new. You'd hope that as they build familiarity too, they can maybe find a new level complementing one another.
They'll get another chance to do it tonight, presumably. We don't know the lineup for sure, but I would expect them to be together again tonight against the Chicago Blackhawks in Chicago. And we'll talk more about that, more about what he's seeing early in the season from the Canucks with Yannick Hansen next here on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Trance here with you. Canucks Talk brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Let Kubota do your heavy lifting. Visit them online at DLEAMC.com. We are live from the Kintech studio. Kintech, Canada's favorite orthotics provider. Powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Canucks take on the Blackhawks. 5:15 Pacific puck drop tonight. Of course, you'll be able to hear it here on Sportsnet 650. And to help us chat a little bit more about that game and everything going on around the Canucks, we're very pleased to be joined by former Vancouver Canuck regular contributor here on Sportsnet 650. He is Yannick Hansen. Yannick, thank you as always for joining us. How are you today?
Yeah, my pleasure. I'm good. How are you guys doing?
We're doing very well. So one big topic of conversation this week, and this is, partly because of what Elliot Friedman had to say on 32 Thoughts this week, but, you know, we're always talking about Elias Pettersson, and specifically this week, the idea of, is the noise around the player affecting his play? And, you know, obviously that's something really only Elias Pettersson can answer, but I am curious about, you know, the process that players who, you know, young players who come up with the Canucks or guys who come here from other markets, how much of an adjustment is it to kind of get used to how much focus and how much conversation there is about your play in Vancouver specifically? What's that learning process like for players?
It's a steep curve. Some people don't want it. There's a reason you guys hear those rumbles, or they don't want to come to Canada because of the pressure and all these things, and that is what it is. They don't want to be scrutinized. They like to live in once they leave the rink, nobody's talking about it, nobody is complaining or anything like that. So there's definitely some to that. As for when does players start feeling it, they probably start feeling it before we start talking about it. Because as a player, once you go, depending on the player, obviously, like when I was playing on the fourth line, I wasn't stressing that I hadn't scored in three games. Then maybe it was like seven or eight games. But when I was playing with the Twins, if I hadn't scored in three games, I was stressing it because like, okay, now when am I going to get pulled off? So it kind of shifts. So for Petey's sakes, like there's no question before we started talking about it, he was feeling it. Again, does it wear on him more that we do it? I don't know. Again, you'd have to know the individual or be him to answer that question. But there's no question that things aren't going well and they haven't gone well for a while. So you're hoping that it can get solved somehow. We talked about it before they went on this road trip. Maybe it's good they get away a little bit, away from the noise. Not the greatest start to the season and can get away, get some wins, and now at least the team can come back. Granted, they have a good result tonight. It's been a great road trip. They can come back. And the team situation where they're sitting in the standing and how they're playing, all that has been washed and all is good and well. Now it's individual players you start zoning in on.
That is learning to block out the noise. Is that like almost a skill that players can work on and develop and get better at as they get older and as they're in the league longer?
I don't think you can block it out. Everybody is susceptible to it. No matter what they say and how they carry themselves. Like when you lie in bed at night and that voice inside of your head telling you you're not good enough, it's hard to quiet. So I don't think you can block it out. Obviously there are ways to go about it. And not letting that snowball keep rolling. But when you are a player who's used to produce, who's supposed to produce, don't get me wrong, all of us that play in the NHL, at some point, we are the guy. It might not be in the NHL, then it's in a lower league, or it's in Europe, or wherever it is. So we all felt that, so know what it's like. Like I said, it is very hard to quiet. And it's very hard to say, oh, it doesn't matter that I didn't score again. I'll score next. Because when that keep happening, team starts losing or aren't performing. And now it's almost like it's your fault. I know it's not zoned in or one player's fault in any way, but everybody needs to pull their weight. And when you're brought in to carry a certain amount of weight and you're not, it's weighing on you now.
Yannick, putting you on the spot a little bit here, but do you have a recollection or a memory of a spot of criticism or a moment during your Canucks tenure when the criticism was difficult for you to handle?
For me, I'd say I was fortunate enough, maybe not fortunate, that I never made enough money that people were complaining that I weren't doing what I was supposed to do. Maybe I wish that people had complaining. Let me put it that way. From a team standpoint, yes. I was fortunate. I played on some very good teams. I think we had 2 years where we weren't playoff teams. So one of the years I got traded. And not to sweep anything up, but it was never my fault. There were always Quinn, there were always Kessler, there were Burr, all these guys that were, they were there to carry the team. But I saw it on them and how it weighed on them. And again, you did everything you could. I couldn't go out and score 3 points in a game on a Tuesday night in Mini and win us that game. That was not me. Hank and Danny could do that, and then we'd win the game. Yeah, they needed help. But again, in the NHL, I never felt that way. Personally, from a team standpoint, yes, of course I would have liked to have played better and maybe scored on that one chance that was set up for me. But I didn't feel like that this game or this season, it came down to how I did or how I played. Obviously, everybody do a little better and the team performs a little better and we're all better for it. But in that sense, not in the NHL. In other leagues around and when I was younger, it definitely there were that. When I lined up for the puck drop for the first face-off, I knew that we probably need to produce tonight if we need to win this game. Otherwise, we're going to lose. So it's, like I said, we've all experienced it at different levels. Obviously, there's a different scrutiny in the NHL, but once we play, it doesn't matter if it's in the WHL or it's in Finland or it's in Denmark. When we play to win. And you have a role on those teams, and then it's just a matter of where you're fitting into the hierarchy, if you will.
Rick Tocchet spoke today about having sort of trust built up in his group to close out the road trip strong based on what he saw last season. Now, you know, this has been a successful road trip to this point. They've got, you know, 2 wins in 3 games. It becomes a wildly successful trip with a win against a Chicago team that they should beat, but a Chicago team that also has enough firepower to hurt you if you're not sharp. What do you learn about a team in a spot like the Canucks are in tonight?
Maturity. It's hard. Like you just mentioned, we went all the way east. We had a rough start. Now you collected 2 wins. Now you need to make this a playoff caliber team road trip where you don't just come back 500. You need this win. And yeah, on paper, when you started this trip, this was the easiest game. But in all earnest, after the first game traveling east in Tampa, there's no question that's the hardest. This one is difficult because you're on your way home. You just want to get back. You want to get back to your own bed, to your own life, back in your own dressing room, and you're just trying to get to the United Center, get your stuff on, play the game, and then get out of there as quick as possible. But again, that mindset also can lead to some tardiness, not playing great, not getting off to the right footing, all these things. And that's where maturity kicks in, that making sure that, yeah, it is Chicago and they're not expected to be a playoff team and all these things. But let's make sure we don't make it harder on ourselves than we have to. Go out, play a great game, sound defensively, and then don't feed into there because they obviously have some offensive players that like to produce. When you're a team that aren't in the playoff, these guys, they're looking for cookies. They're looking to see their names on the stat sheet at the end of the night because that's the only real way you can measure your season when you're not a playoff team. Because, again, you do have to play against next year, so you're looking to put yourself in a better position. And, yeah, I get it. Team performs better. Players perform better. But there is it's tried and true, this stuff. These teams that are at the bottom of the standings, like, there will be a lot more selfishness on those teams, and they are looking for – they are looking to score goals.
How do you take advantage if you're the team on the other end, right? And you think, okay, this team is going to maybe be a little selfish, looking for those cookies. How do you take advantage of a team in that situation?
Make them quit. Make them realize, okay, this is not going to be easy tonight. They're not going to give up 2-on-1s, 3-on-2s. It's too tough. I got to get in the front of the net to battle for position and all these things. And then they'll, okay, probably tomorrow night will be easier that these guys are coming in and then we'll try it again. But if you start if you start trading chances, then everybody is licking their chops and waiting to get over the boards and get these scoring opportunities that they're looking for. So make it, again, as boring a game as you possibly can here. Don't give them anything. Play sound defensively. I know it's cliche, but again, playing that way will tire out these teams, and then they will look for easier opportunities against other guys.
One of the trouble spots, I think it's fair to say, for the Canucks so far this season has been the power play, which looks, you know, flat in a way it looked last year and certainly into the playoffs, or for the back half of last year anyways, and into the playoffs. And, you know, we were just talking with Landon Ferraro about it. He's called it just, it looks very slow, the power play, to his eyes. What do they need? Like, when you're in that spot as a team, right, and you feel like you're kind of stuck in a rut on the power play specifically, what are some of the things the players need to do just to shake things up and maybe get the power play playing quicker and out of that rut?
Yeah, you normally just hear, like, again, I wasn't a power play guy, but you normally just hear, just gets pucked to the net, start shooting, create some scrambles and stuff like that. But I'd like to see a different variation out there too. Not necessarily the players, because obviously the players they have out there are the best players.
Yeah.
So I'm not talking about switching out JT Miller or Quinn Hughes or anything like that. But again, something other than the umbrella that reads Quinn Hughes one side, JT and PD on the other. Maybe throw a different look at teams somehow, because everybody scouts so well, know exactly what to expect and what to do. Again, can you stop it? That's another question. But everybody knows what they're trying to do. We know what they're trying to do on TV when we're sitting here, and so do the players. So again, give them another couple looks where they're not entirely sure exactly what to defend against. So you can't just go out and blindly kill penalties here, where I know when Quinn Hughes drags it across the blue line, he's going to give it back to JT. JT's going to roll over top. He's going to come down and fire his wrister. That's the standard play, and it's been like that for 2 years. The bumper spot, obviously, Bo's been missing in that spot. When he was there, he gave them another option where we haven't seen a lot of goals scored from that area, where credit to Bo that he scored a lot of goals from there. So that's kind of been taken out, which means now you're only really worried about the JT Miller coming down the pipe, and then is anything going cross cream to Petey? And we have not seen a ton of that. So now, as a penalty killer, there's not a lot of options I need to cover here, so I can kind of cheat a little bit to these very dangerous ones that they do have, and then make them beat you other ways that we haven't seen yet. So again, some variety would be nice to see.
Yannick, the power play dynamics you just described, like, we're seeing in New York, like, the Islanders, when they acquired Bo, were one of the league's worst power plays, and they've been at least average in his time there suddenly. Did we underrate how important Bo was to the Canucks 5-on-4 in this market?
I don't think you underrate. He was a very good player, and he filled a vital role. There's no question they kept the right player if it was between JT or Bo. But what Bo did here has not been filled. Some of those parts have been filled, if you will, but the power play part has not been filled. And the bumper spot is often overlooked because it's not the flashiest position. You're there for help, for outlet, but he was able to get there, get shots off, score goals, bump it, and we haven't seen that since he left. So there's no question that it was underrated what he brought to that that fivesome, if you will. So again, they're hoping, looking, trying new guys in there, but it wasn't Lindholm. So far, it hasn't been DeBrusk either that's solving it and bringing it back to the power play that was when he was here. Again, it was a newer power play, so a lot of teams had seen them play together. Once you start zoning in on guys, it gets a little easier. But there's no question, credit to Bo and what he brought to that unit. It hasn't been copied since.
What have you thought about this new look Pettersson line with Höglander and Garland on the wings?
I don't like it. I think those two wingers are not top six. Petey's obviously not producing in the top six as a top six right now, but I think if you play Garland and Höglander in the bottom six, when they match up against other teams, they're better and they tilt the ice, where when you creep them up in the top six, now they're not better. So now you run the risk of losing on two lines instead of just one right now. I like Garland on the third line because he's one of those players who can drive a line from the wings, which aren't very normal or common. And he's proven for quite a bit of time now that he's capable of doing that. And it doesn't even matter that his normal running mates aren't there in Joshua and stuff like that. He's still doing it. So I'd prefer him to stick there on the third line. And to be honest, preferably with Höglander. So there's nothing wrong with them playing together. I just think when you bring Petey into the mix now, as an opposing team, and I look at the whiteboard now, they're gonna get tougher matchups, which means now they're not above water anymore. You're either floating or you're sinking a little bit, and now you're taking some offense out. And it's not like you've got a ton of offense 5-on-5 to begin with. So that's where, if Petey's line isn't clicking, and if that's with the Brusque or whoever the other winger is here, I don't necessarily want them to ruin another line or tearing another line apart that might be doing the job for them to that point. I think it's up to Petey to make it work. Now he's gotten quite a bit of time, different line mates and all these things to make it work with the wingers that are brought in. Because again, if you move DeBrusque up with JT, or again DeBrusque on the third line, now we're starting talking about your UFA big signing to end up on your third line. That's not a good spot either. You need him going as well. So there's a lot of intangibles here. But to answer your question, it was a little longer than I anticipated here. I don't particularly like it.
Would you go back to DeBrusque next to Pettersson then? I mean, it obviously we all know he was signed. Okay, hey, we're going to get a winger for Elias Pettersson, but they went away from it pretty quickly. And, you know, partly I can understand that, right? It wasn't having results, but do you think it's time for them to go back and say, okay, we gave it a little break, but this is the pairing we envisioned and we're going to try to make it work?
You have to make that work. If not, then DeBrusque has to be riding shotgun with JT and Besser. And that's loading up your top line here, in my opinion, maybe a little bit too much. Now you're asking Petey to bring along two third-line wingers and make it into a top six, where there's no question DeBrusque is a top six winger, or he should be. Mm-hmm. He at least produced like that in a reasonable bunch in Boston. And again, he's signed in that sense as well. So again, I would give them a little longer leash. It's obviously not good for Sambles here. But the other one, we're right back to where we were last year when we said we can't have this happen again. We can't have Petey having to get two wingers going or figuring out how to play with two new guys all the time. He needs some consistency as well. To be honest, it's a while now where we're talking about Petey and not the right guys. At a certain point here, he has to get it done too. Mm-hmm. It's gonna fall on him as well. I just feel like giving him some quality winger at least. I'm not saying Garland and Höglander isn't quality, but somebody who's done it to a certain extent, and then give them a little more leeway.
I wanted to ask you quickly about the defense as well here, Yannick. And, you know, I think over the last couple of games, we've really seen Quinn Hughes turn the dial up and start to look just like that dominant player again who controls play every time he's out there. And that's great to see. But are you at all concerned that the Canucks on the blue line are a little too reliant on Quinn Hughes and what he can do with the puck, and that the drop off from that pair, Hughes and Hronek, to the other couple of pairs seems like it's still pretty steep right now for the team?
Yeah, there's no question it's steep. I think that's okay. I'm hesitant there a little bit, but because of what he brings and the offensive minutes he brings, he closes in on that 30 minutes every night. And then that's half a game you play offense, then let the other four pair or the other four D's play the defensive minutes, if you will. Again, there's obviously not an offense coming from Myers, Susie, and whoever the other two are. But the amount that the Hronek and Quinn brings, I think that's enough. Obviously, you'd like to be deeper. But we've seen what happens when you bring in more puck-moving defensemen in this thing. There's just not enough offensive minutes to go around. And then you end up playing these guys defensive minutes instead, which they won't excel at. So as long as the other four can get it done defensively, I don't have an issue with it. He's still young. He is your horse. And you play him, I'd say, till the wheels fall off, but it doesn't look like they can that right now at the pace he's playing with. Obviously, you don't want him getting hurt in any way. But these type of players, they don't come along very often. And when they do, they get played like this. Like, I go back to playing against Scott Niedermeyer. It was the same thing, that the skating defenseman that's impossible to cover. And they can be on the ice for half an hour and they can come off and they can be ready to play again. It doesn't look like they're tired because they just control the game. You get him the offensive minutes on the blue line. They aren't as hard and taxing either. It's different if he's in his own end, getting hemmed in, getting finished, checked in the end boards and all these things when people dump pucks for him. But if he's getting the right minutes, let him run.
Yannick, this was awesome. Really appreciate it. Thank you for doing this as always, and hopefully we'll chat again soon.
Yeah, my pleasure. Take care, guys.
That is former Canuck Yannick Hansen joining us here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. And I got to say, I mean, Yannick's always fantastic. That was like straight fire today, Drancer. That was just fantastic stuff from Yannick Hansen here.
On point. Shooting accurately will be spared criticism, also because we don't pay him enough.
Yeah, him saying, fortunately for me, I didn't make that much money. He's like, wait, maybe I should have got criticized more. That was so good. I didn't make enough money for people to get mad at me.
Yeah, you know, it is an unhealthy dynamic, I will say, of the one of the many of the hard cap system, right, where players become a number and that number becomes
defines
an opportunity
them.
Cost.
Yeah.
That fans are wise to, and all of a sudden you're, you know, I mean, I hate it. Like, I hate the, you know, that really good player, the team really shouldn't sign him dynamic that's inevitable. I mean, I honestly think most of the time that's good analysis, but it's still silly when you really sort of step back and think about what we're actually talking about in the picture. It's like that hardworking guy who scores goals and is really cool to watch. Yeah. Can't sign him.
Well, look at like the dynamic around Brock Besser right now. Right. I mean,
right.
Like, you know, homegrown guy breaks through with 40 goals last year. Right. You know, the longest tenured Canuck, and he's off to a good start.
Universally lauded as fantastic person.
Yeah. And now it's like, and it's a legitimate discussion. Like, can they even afford to keep him? And you're right.
Totally.
If, even a non-hard cap system, it'd be done already. You get the feeling. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, yeah, of course, this is a no-brainer, right? But because of that system, now all of a sudden it becomes this really complex, delicate situation. And, you know, we have no idea where it's going to go. I would probably bet on him sticking around. But again, we just don't know.
Yeah, I don't. You may be overselling the Besser suspense a little bit.
No, but it is
but
tricky.
Only a little bit.
Yeah, it is tricky. Like, it's not nearly as cut and dry as it could be in an alternate system.
No.
Given all of the factors that, like, would point to him staying normally. All right, that was awesome.
Okay,
with
I capitulate.
Yeah, that's
I capitulate.
Right. Capitulate, dang it. That was a pleasure with Yannick. We'll take a break here. We'll hear from Rick Tocchet, and we could take some of your texts as well in our final segment here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. It's Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drance, live from the Kintec studio. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. The Bridge Street Dunbar Lumber in Ladner has moved to Progress Way in Tilbury's Industrial Park. More room, more product, more awesome. Details at dunbarlumber.com. We've got some space in this segment after we hear from Rick Tocchet, so send your thoughts in 650-650 to the Dunbar Lumber text line. We'll try to get some of them before the end of the show. As a reminder, it is a 5:15 puck drop tonight for the Canucks, part of the NHL's Frozen Frenzy slate of games, all 32 teams in action today. So after us, it'll be Kipper and Bourne, and then Sat and Dan will come on with Canucks Central in the pregame show starting at 3 o'clock. Of course, Batch and Randeep have the call of the game, and then Sat and Bick on the post-game show here on Sportsnet 650. But as mentioned, first, let's hear from Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet.
Rick, just heading into tonight, first matchup obviously against this team this season, what areas of your game do you just want to see at that top level tonight?
Well, I think game management and consistency is something that I think we're getting better at, but that's the game we're trying to search for, the 16-minute of that. Obviously, protecting the guts of the ice a little bit better. I think, like I said, we've been improving on that, but those are the things that I'd like to see tonight.
With it being kind of the end of this long road stretch, how important is it that you just see 100% from these guys tonight, yeah, not having a game until next Saturday?
Yeah, I'm comfortable with this team just from even last year. You know, I remember those last games of a long road trip. I'm pretty sure that we've had some really good games. I'm not really concerned. Sometimes coaches are concerned about that last game on a road trip, but for the most part, I've really respected the game plan of the players and their mindset in the last game. So they're not just like, hey, let's get home. You know, they know there's work to be done tonight against a good team.
JT Miller's on the ice for optional. He's in.
Yeah, he looks like a problem. I mean, we'll do a game time, but we'll see how he is. I'll talk to him later today.
Do you think he'll be able to take draws or something you'll have to assess in game?
We'll probably assess it. You know, whatever we decide, I'm going to err on the side of caution.
What have you gotten from, you mentioned in Philly, I think, that you'd put Garland up with Pettersson in part to just sort of help him drive. What have you got from that line to this point?
Well, obviously some production there that, you know, is getting us a goal and stuff like that. I think I've actually played him defensive zone faceoffs that they went out. You know, I think with a guy like Garland, if you watch him throughout camp, it seems like every time I put him with a line, he kind of lifts people up. So that was kind of my theory. Now, whether I keep it for a long time, I don't know. But right now, you know, they're on the ice for more chances for and against, and that's a good thing for us right now.
Is Dakota telling you about how he's feeling, and have you got any firmer idea when he might be available to play?
Yeah, I think today's going to be another kind of a hump day. You know, he's going to do some pushing and shoving on the ice today with our guys. I don't know exactly the date, but obviously he's getting closer and closer, and you know, he's starting to ramp up his mental aspect of, you know, I got to be ready here. And I think that's the big key. I think maybe a week ago, kind of in a rut, but I think he's getting over that rut right now where it's getting close.
But the last training camp he was healthy for, I know that his conditioning wasn't maybe right, what either of you wanted.
Sure.
Do you have any idea during this ordeal that he's been through whether he's been able to maintain his conditioning?
Yeah, I don't think it's dropped off too much. You know, obviously there's inactivity for a couple weeks. It was tough, but I just think he's matured as a guy in the sense that he knows where what he has to do over the last couple of years till now. And, you know, I watch him on the ice. He's just ramping up more. You know, he's a big part for our, you know, a guy that can win battles in the corners and PK guy and in front of the net. You know, that's the thing that we're really looking for when he gets back.
Ranking in tonight?
Yeah.
I find when the guys come back to a place where they played in the past, it fires them up or inspires them a little bit more.
Yeah, that's a tough question because it goes both ways. It's to the individual. You know, some guys go back to their place they can't play, you know, and some guys, you know, they love to do it. So I don't know. You have to ask him how he feels about that.
Rick, you worked with Connor as a younger player, and you've had Hoglander now for a year and a half. Was there any similarities? You described them both as buzzsaws on occasion, right?
Garland and
Hoglander. You know, some of the stuff they do on the wall. Have you seen any similarities in terms of teaching that defensive side of the game, reining in sort of the wild horse elements, just whether it's as simple as stops and starts, not bombing down as F3?
Well, I think that's a really good, you know, it's a good benchmark for Hoggy where to go, because if you look at Garland, when I had him in Arizona, he was a point guy. Really, he was just an individual guy that just did his own thing, and he wanted to be coached and be a complete player. So he keeps reminding me, he got, I don't know, somebody voted for him for the Selke. I think he was like fifth place or something, or he got a fifth place vote or something. And but I will tell you, like, I have no problem playing the last minute of a game with an empty net. Like, that's how far Garland's gone, and I think that he's a benchmark for Hoggy. Where can Hoggy be in a position with 3 minutes left there's a draw on our end. Can I leave him out there for the draw knowing he's going to do the right thing? Is he there yet? Maybe not right there, but he's definitely a lot closer than he was last year. And I think Garland's a perfect example how he took his game to his identity to a different where he's a, I'll be honest, he's been a really good defensively this year too, as much as he's driving play.
That is Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet speaking before they play the Chicago Blackhawks tonight at 5:15 in Chicago. And some interesting commentary there in response to one of your questions, Drancer, from Rick Tocchet about some of the similarities in the development of Connor Garland and Nils Höglander's game. And interesting to hear also how far specifically Connor Garland has come in Tocchet's view on the defensive side of the game, right? I mean, we always tend to talk about the offensive production, the playmaking skills, right, the play driving going forward, but obviously a huge deal for Rick Tocchet. I mean, you know, Connor Garland's not going to get those increased minutes from Tocchet unless he's also really taking care of the defensive side of things. And then I think very telling as well to hear from Rick Tocchet that, okay, 3 minutes left in a one-goal game. Is Höglander quite at that spot yet? No, but he's certainly on the verge of being trusted in those types of spots by Rick Tocchet.
For sure. And, you know, sort of Garland had mentioned to me that he thought Hoaglander's defensive game had come a long way, like even in the time that they've spent together since Penticton. And remember, they've been like locked into a line since Penticton.
That's a good point, yeah.
This was just yesterday. You know, he was talking about how he felt like the adjustment that Höglander was going through here was really similar to his. And his explanation was, as you know, a littler, high motor battle winner, basically, right? Which is something they have in common. Right? Höglander's probably a better finisher, a little bit faster, right? Like a little bit more, I think, dynamic as a neutral zone puck carrier. But then, you know, I think Garland's, like their shared battle along the wall, like battle skills along the wall, like I think Garland's maybe one of the hardest guys in the league to sort of beat, you know, on some of those like spinoffs and things. And I think Garland's playmaking is at a different level. But for the most part, I think there's a commonality there between them as players. And, you know, I think Garland sees that. I think Höglander sees that. And Garland was saying that when you play that style, one thing that's easy to do is you are going a million miles per hour all the time to try and use that skill set, right? Be a weapon. And then you skate too far. You get out of position. You almost have to learn to rein it in as your reps increase. And that was a process that he had to figure out, you know, in terms of the stops and starts, in terms of hanging back when you're F3, right? Sort of reining in the aggressiveness with which players that profile the way both Höglander and Garland do, you know, like need to play with to be successful, right? It's almost, it becomes a double-edged sword in terms of the defensive side of the game to some extent. So figuring out that puck management side, the positional side, you know, that's why I sort of put it to Rick Tocchet as reining in that wild horse element of their games. You know, I do think that's sort of an area, not for improvement, but like an area where Höglander's already begin to grow and where I think it'll continue to happen. And I think a lot of it's just NHL reps. Like I think getting into NHL games more consistently, you know, and now that he's played, what, 200 plus games in his NHL career, like I think that's probably the major part of this. You know, part of it's just natural, and I do think part of it's the work that he's putting in and sort of being thoughtful about with Vancouver's coaches. So Tocchet's picking up on it. I think it's a reason why his role has spiked, why he's taken line rushes on the second line and actually playing second line minutes at the moment. He's a top six forward for this team right now, and look, the competition's going to be stiff, especially once Dakota Joshua returns to hold down that kind of role all season, but you know, if the defensive side continues to progress as rapidly as it has the last 18 months for Höglander, he'll have a shot to be a fixture there. And a fixture there for a long time in this league, whether he's with the Canucks or not. And obviously, we expect him to be with the Canucks, but I'm just saying, like, he'll be a top six forward if he can sort of rein in some of those positional gaps that have held him back from a minute standpoint at certain, you know, like portions of his career.
5-on-5 ice time for Canucks forwards so far this season. Connor Garland is in first with 74 minutes. Elias Pettersson has 71. Brock Besser, 68. JT Miller, 67. Nils Höglander in fifth at 66, right? Like, just a minute behind JT Miller, just a couple of minutes behind Brock Besser for his usage so far this
Garland
season.
Garland number one, though.
Carlin Garland number one by, like, 3 minutes over Elias Pettersson.
Yeah, like, well, no one, you know, this market especially, I mean, you remember the, what was the forward that Jacob Megna or Jason Megna?
Yep.
You remember the Jason Megna wars?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Man, there have been some obscure battles in the history of the Canucks online ecosystem, huh? But, you know, if you're overusing a player in this market whose performance and quality doesn't necessarily warrant it, like, fans will usually complain.
Mm-hmm.
You're hearing none of that with Garland playing the most minutes among Canucks forwards 5-on-5 by, like, some distance. That I think that's an enormously telling thing, especially given what the conversation was around Garland, like, literally just 12 months ago.
Mm-hmm. Like, at this exact time. Yeah, at this exact time. It was like,
he requested a trade.
Yeah, he got in, his agent got involved to try to facilitate a trade because it was so difficult to do, right? That was 12 months ago. And now leading the team in 5-on-5 ice time through five games is Connor Garland.
With Canucks fans widely recognizing. Like, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, it's totally justified and makes nothing but sense. And on that, you know, that adaptation and adjustment process for Nils Höglander, the thing about them being both kind of those undersized motor guys, I think that's interesting. I think it's also just a part of making the adjustment as you move up from kind of the bottom six to the top six, right? Like, now all of a sudden, you know, it's one thing if you're playing on the fourth line with, you know, Nils Åman and Sam Lafferty last year, right? And it's, okay, get out there, skate really fast, get in, hit somebody. If you happen to generate an opportunity, that's awesome. But so much of what you're asked to do in that role is about energy. You have to take care of your business, of course, but so much of it is about that energy. Now, with Elias Pettersson, Connor Garland, right, Nils Höglander, like, they want to set up shop in the offensive zone with that line. They want to generate the types of chances that Höglander converted on against Philly, and I think that just requires a bit of a different mindset, but he seems to be developing that mindset pretty quickly, right? He seems to be adapting on the fly really well to some of the different demands that are asked of him now that he's moved up in the lineup. And as you said, look, we'll see how long it lasts, especially once Dakota Joshua is back. For my money right now, and especially as you're easing Joshua back in, somebody texted in about this, I would be tempted, as much chemistry as there was obviously last year, and it was fantastic between Garland and Joshua. When Joshua returns, I'd be tempted to stick Höglander with Pettersson and Garland, keep that together, bring Joshua back in a slightly reduced role, at least at first. But it's going to be tough to go away from the chemistry we saw between Garland and Joshua last season. I wanted to read this one from Tony as well, and it involves Jake DeBrusque. And you know, I know on the morning show they were kind of talking about, has DeBrusque really been that notable so far? What have you liked from him? And they kind of gave him, you know, it's been fine, that kind of grade on Jake DeBrusque. And this text comes in from Tony. I do find it very interesting how much we discuss the fact that Jake DeBrusque is not playing on Pettersson's line. This makes no sense. Alvin and Rutherford obviously like DeBrusque's game, but if the reality is that he matches better with Miller and Besser, so what? If it turns out that Garland is a better match with Petey, then maybe our second line is Pettersson, Garland, and Höglander, or even Pettersson, Garland, and Joshua. And I feel pretty similar, right? Like, I'm not committed to making DeBrusque work with Pettersson. You want him in the top six. You don't want him to find himself on the outside looking in, you know, playing a reduced role on the third line. But as much as we knew he was signed to complement Elias Pettersson, I mean, how quickly did we start talking about, but you know where he'd fit really nicely? Alongside Miller and Besser. That was a day two talking point for Jake DeBrusque. So it shouldn't be a great surprise that we're here. And ultimately, the goal is to have two dangerous, functioning, you know, and highly functioning top six lines, not to make sure that Elias Pettersson and Jake DeBrusque work. If that's part of the solution, then that's great. But yeah, I think he absolutely has a shot to be really good with JT Miller and Brock Besser. And if you can figure out the other line somewhere else, then that's fine. Just get the most you can out of Jake DeBrusque, wherever it is in the lineup.
Yeah, and you know, Jake DeBrusque has 4 points in five games, but hasn't scored yet, mm-hmm. right? And I don't know, I mean, I sort of brought this up that, like, there is an element of DeBrusque's game where he can be a bit streaky, right? Like, the idea of the Canucks getting 10 games into the season and DeBrusk having one or two goals or maybe none, you know, was absolutely well within the range of outcomes based on how DeBrusk has produced throughout his career. Now, the thing about saying someone's a streaky player when they're not scoring is there is a flip side of that coin, right? There's going to be a 2-week stretch where it's like, oh my God, Jake DeBrusk can't stop filling the net. And like, that's going to come here, even if we haven't seen it yet. So I don't know. I you wouldn't say that Jake DeBrusk's been disappointing, would you?
No, I think I am higher on what we've seen from Jake DeBrusk so far than probably people at large here in Vancouver. Like,
but are people at large talking about it as if it's disappointing?
I think it's anytime you're the high profile signing, and as you know, they committed as much term and money as they did to him, right? There's always that, all right, let's see it, right? Let's get off to a good start and no goals. He was supposed to come in and compliment Pettersson and he's bumping around the lineup. Like, I don't think it's a panic situation. I don't think people are, you know, they really screwed this one up. But I think there's some concern, might even be too strong a word, but just, I don't know. I think there's some anxious people waiting to see Jake DeBrusk really get going. But I think there's been some pretty positive signs.
Yeah, his playmaking's been good.
His skating ability to carry the puck. I mean, it doesn't seem to get talked about, but you know, because all the focus is on the Myers pass to Besser on that goal against Philly. But like, DeBrusk starts that whole sequence by just carrying the puck with speed into the neutral zone, taking on defenders, getting the puck in deep, right? And kind of sets up that whole sequence. So it's maybe not the flashiest thing. It's not, you know, him clicking with Pettersson or clicking in the bumper spot on the power play. But if that's kind of your baseline for Jake DeBrusk, like, okay, that's pretty good. You can work with that.
No question. And, you know, I think the only thing I'd say is if you were among those people dropping like Hyman comps, right? The fact that the power play utility has not shown up, right? The fact that he's already not on PP1 today in game six, you know, shows you how unwise those comps were, right? Like, for me, that was always just a bit silly. But DeBrusk is, and I think has performed like a big ad for this top six. I think he's a dynamic element, whether the goals have gone in for him or not. And I think you're seeing that in the assists. There's a variety of additional chances that he set up, especially those two glorious opportunities for Pettersson and Tampa Bay that were high-skilled plays.
Yep.
And, you know, you're going to be reminded tonight when you tune in to watch the game tonight and watch Ilya Mikheyev for the Chicago Blackhawks of just how significant an upgrade DeBrusk has been in terms of upgrading this team's overall game, whether he's scored in the first 10 days of the season or not.
Yeah, and six shots on goal through the last couple of games, right? Like, I'm not concerned. The production is coming, right? He has 4 points in five games. So, you know, the production is there, but the goal scoring will come for Jake DeBrusk as well. And again, like, I mean, really, I think that Philly game, was that the first time he started the game with JT Miller and Brock Besser, right? So it's really only been one game, but I think he's got every chance to fit in really nicely with that line as part of the top line for the Vancouver Canucks. 650. Yeah, go ahead.
I just also want to say that Heinen line is a big deal too, because this team, like that Heinen, Bluger, Sherwood trio that the club has carved out, I think that's a big, big development for this team, especially if they can recreate the success that they had in Philadelphia. Obviously, I'm not taking that to the bank, given what the Flyers looked like as a team. They just looked so tired coming back from the West Coast as swiftly as they did, and then playing their home opener the next night and ultimately getting booed in Philadelphia. That line and the Brännström-Desharnais pair in particular in that Philadelphia game were huge takeaways for me, because they actually helped the team control play in their minutes. And whether they're producing or not, like, this team can't be getting shelled without Quinn Hughes on the ice. They were in the first four games. Philly was sort of the first time we saw Vancouver's depth like hold this season, right? Now, five games isn't enough. Four games isn't enough. One game from Philadelphia certainly isn't enough to detect the trends either way. But what I'd say is, you know, if we're going the concern or disappointment route or what have you, like, the only thing that has in any way caused me any measure of like alarm in watching this team play so far has been how they've performed in non-Hughes minutes with the exception of that game against the Flyers. And so that to me is like the number one thing I'm going to be watching for tonight and all season long, frankly, or at least until, you know, we get to game 30 and it's like, oh, it wasn't a problem. Thank goodness. That to me is sort of thing to watch. Number one is how do the Canucks hold up in non-Hughes minutes against a relatively feckless Chicago Blackhawks side? Can they control play as well as they did against the Flyers in minutes when Quinn Hughes gets a breather?
And I do got to say,
because they'll need to.
Yeah, like, that third line, I've been really impressed with Teddy Bluger's game to start the season.
Oh, yeah.
Like, he looks like, I don't want to, you know, get ahead of myself here. I found another offensive level or anything, but he's been fantastic. He's been really, really solid and looks even more. Individually, he looks more offensively dangerous to me than he did last year. Obviously, last year he had that run when he was with Joshua and Garland, but it always felt like he was kind of, you know, the third member of that line, and so much of the attention was on Garland and Joshua. But now with neither of those guys on his line, like, he still looks really effective in his role.
Yeah, he's good.
Yeah,
he's a good player. And you know what? I think you're right to shout it out because Bluger's one of those guys who, especially as he sticks around for a few years, can become like the furniture. Mm. You know what I mean? Like, you take for granted what he contributes, and you shouldn't, right? Like, Bluger's a huge part of this team. You know, I don't know if I'm buying that he's hit another level offensively, but he's looked fast, and he's been effective whenever he's been on the ice, especially on the penalty kill, where his contributions are absolutely essential for this hockey club.
It is the Canucks and the Chicago Blackhawks tonight at 5:15. Kipper and Bourne is next, then Canucks Central, and the pregame show with Dan Riccio and Satyar Shah. Drance will be there in the building covering it. Not on the show tomorrow, however. He'll be in transit back to Vancouver, so it'll be just me, but we had so much fun having Landon in studio on Friday. He's going to join me for an hour again tomorrow on the show to react to this game. I think we'll have Jason Buchla as well. We're going to try to move the crossover to Thursday if we can. So some things in flux, but Drance, enjoy the game tonight. Safe travels tomorrow. We'll talk to you on Thursday, and I'll be back with Canucks Talk tomorrow here on Sportsnet 650.